Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're putting blended finance in the spotlight. The strategy is gaining momentum and visibility. In the past decade, it's mobilised over $200 billion in capital towards sustainable development in developing countries. But what exactly is it? And how does it mobilise that private capital toward high-impact social and environmental projects that might otherwise have been overlooked by the mainstream market? Well, a recent UBS Trends in Philanthropy report with a focus on blended finance unpacked four trends that will drive impact in 2024 and beyond. So what are those trends and what do they mean for the future of using philanthropic and public capital to catalyse commercial investment in development funding? Well, luckily for us, to answer those questions, we're joined now by Dun Daver, the Head of Social Finance at the UBS Optimus Foundation, as well as the Head of Social Impact and Philanthropy for India and the Middle East at UBS. Dun, a warm welcome to the show. It's a delight to hear from you. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of that report, remind us what blended finance is, first of all. Give us some of your frames of reference in the space.
Blended finance is the strategic use of public and philanthropic funds to mobilize additional funds for the sustainable development goals. So it is simply an approach to really structuring funding from two or more funders when they have different risk, return, and impact appetites or expectations. What does that mean? That basically means that it is a structure that helps make social and environmental projects more attractive to funders. And by funders, I mean these are funders or investors such as the governments, usually via development finance institutions, philanthropists, and investors that are seeking market rate returns, or commercial investors, as they're sometimes called. So when public or philanthropic funders provide their capital to be used strategically in this manner to reduce risks or increase returns as needed to attract other investors, all parties stand to gain. And that's how blended finance works. The public and philanthropic funders achieve more impact per dollar and they leverage more funding per dollar, which is the amount of additional funds mobilized through their efforts. And that's why this type of capital is often called catalytic capital. The investors, on the other hand, benefit from the risk cushion that this catalytic capital provides. So in this way, the blended finance enables us to bring in more funding for projects than without the blend. And that's critical because there still remains trillions of dollars of an annual funding gap to achieve the sustainable development goals. And this is one of the ways to address that.
Yeah, interesting. And it's funny because we've been talking a little bit about blended finance over the years on this program, but it feels like, I don't know if we're at an inflection point, it certainly feels like there's a change in engagement, whether that's from, I guess, you know, the clients that you're talking to, from investors more broadly, Dun. They seem to be taking much more of an interest. And I know the numbers speak to that. We've seen a mobilization of over $200 billion US dollars in capital towards sustainable development in these markets, thanks to blended finance. Would you say that people are now paying more attention? There's a different kind of discourse around it.
Yeah, I would say so, because we are finding, and there are different types of clients and investors that we are seeing engaging increasingly on the topic. So at the UBS Optimus Foundation, we work together with UBS clients to support their philanthropic initiatives, providing them with an execution platform for this. So it is the catalytic capital providers that I mentioned earlier that we engage through the foundation. And we are finding that for this group of clients, there is greater engagement. They're paying more attention to blended finance because it allows for more impact through leverage for them. So for example, as a philanthropist, I might use my $10 million donation to support an education project, or I could use that same $10 million as a credit enhancement or a guarantee in a blended finance structure and mobilize, say, $25 million instead for that same education project, thereby deriving more impact per dollar of mine. So by lowering the overall cost of capital for projects and enabling them to bring in larger investments, our clients are attracted by the fact that they can have a greater impact on addressing the global challenges such as poverty, inequality, climate change that are close to their hearts. And then on the other hand, the investors are also paying more attention to blended finance because it is a way that allows them to gain access to social and or environmental projects and impact while still earning a financial return on their investments. So you're right. I think we are seeing much more attention to the topic.
Well, you mentioned the Optimus Foundation, of course, there. Tell me a bit more about how the Optimus Foundation fits into this broader blended finance landscape. And maybe talk a bit about realising some of these big goals. We know how important they are on a sort of macro level. How blended finance, why it's critical in terms of attempting to realise the goals that the foundation has at its core?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. So the foundation, at its core, is committed to driving systemic and catalytic impact for the most marginalized communities, especially looking at children and young people globally. Now, given that there are sizable funding gaps to achieve this kind of impact, it is important for us as a foundation to think about ways to draw in more and better funding to high impact projects. And so with that goal in mind, blended finance has been a critical lever for us as a foundation to achieve our goals. It's even more relevant, I think, to us, given our unique proximity to UBS and the opportunity that that presents to engage with private investors through the bank. So the role of our foundation in blended finance really includes the following. So first of all, identifying the projects where blended finance can be applied as an effective funding approach to address social environmental projects. We as a foundation are focused on the areas of education, healthcare, and climate and the environment. And so in these areas, we're able to actually identify use cases for blended finance. Secondly, we are able to contribute to the structuring and also the active management of initiatives, in particular the parts of the blended finance structure that might be dedicated to impact first investments into low middle income countries, for example. And finally, as a foundation, and of course with support from UBS clients, we can play a role in providing also the catalytic capital that is necessary for blended finance. So that's of course the role that we play and sort of where we see ourselves in this blended finance landscape.
Now, Dunn, I mentioned the Trends in Philanthropy piece earlier. You and your colleagues produce this report at the start of each year, and there's a blended finance focus, which was super interesting, and it picks out a number of trends. One that really struck me as particularly compelling reading was looking at how climate-focused blended finance transactions are evolving. The pace of change is really interesting. I know that you made some observations around the regions that are becoming more prominent using this tool and others like it. And I wondered if you could maybe unpack that a bit for us and elaborate a bit on why that is such an interesting area in particular.
Sure, happy to. So yes, one of the four trends that we highlighted is more nature, more climate. And while this might seem contradictory to Convergence's State of Blended Finance report last year, which actually showed a huge decline in blended finance for climate, we do expect an uptick with a surge in deals in the next years. And looking ahead, South, Southeast Asia, as well as Sub-Saharan Africa will be prominent. So those are the regions that we see are really becoming more visible and more prominent in this space. An example is that the $8.5 billion energy transition investment by the South African government, which has received significant donor support from developed countries and is a really good example of a blended finance initiative. In Southeast Asia, we're also seeing that there will be a surge in deals, given that, of course, climate action is significant in the region and particularly significant in the impact that it would have in global emissions. So the kind of deals that we're seeing in the climate space are increasing both the quality and quantity of deal flow. And for example, you also see initiatives such as the Asia Climate Solutions that aim to drive more innovative finance solutions for climate in Asia. So this is one that we partnered together with the Monetary Authority of Singapore, the Australian Department for Foreign Affairs and Trade, Olayan Group and Convergence. And it really provides design funding for initiatives in the region addressing climate. And we're seeing more and more applications coming in of great deal flow in the space. And we're seeing, of course, an interest amongst different stakeholders, philanthropists, government to really boost the sector. So I think that's a very interesting trend to follow.
Absolutely. Now, another narrative that often pops up in the space is metrics. And it's not always maybe the kind of sexiest thing to talk about, but the importance of metrics measurement is so profound. But maybe we could just reflect, Dan, a little bit on that, because if we want to track accurately this evolution in these kinds of transactions, presumably, therefore, we need to be better at managing, measuring impact. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that and how, I don't know, other themes, transparency, accountability, how those things are evolving and whether you think they're happening fast enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think transparency in the space is critical. And actually, it's a very interesting space. The impact measurement and management around impact investing and blended finance as it's emerging. And I think it's critical because at the end of the day, it is the impact measurement and the reporting on impact that actually helps stakeholders to understand the social and environmental impact of their investments. And one of the key drivers, for example, for philanthropists to get engaged, as I mentioned, is that they want to see greater impact, that the leverage that blended finance helps them bring in gives them more impact per dollar. And so in that case, it's really important for us to be able to, as a sector, report on what that impact is. How does it look? How is it measured? And so it's really, I think, becoming very, very critical that we align as an industry on several areas and also look at certain steps that I think are still needed to be taken. So for example, standardization. So we are currently working with different stakeholders to align on a common set of frameworks and standards for measuring and reporting impact. And we hope that this will lead to eventually consistency and comparability of impact data, which is critical. Data collection is another important area where, you know, I think there's room for improvement on data collection processes and how relevant information is gathered on the social and environmental outcomes of initiatives. And this may involve technology solutions or collaborating with local partners to collect data on the ground. And important really is to focus on both the data quality as well as the quantity. Third-party verification is another area that, you know, is becoming increasingly important. So some initiatives involve independent verification or auditing of impact data to ensure accuracy as well as credibility. And this helps to build trust amongst investors and stakeholders. And trust is integral because one of the key issues that you're trying to address also through blended finance is investor hesitancy, because many investors do not understand the space of social and environmental impact. And the way we can eventually and in the long run address that is by having credible data sources that are verified by third parties. And then finally, the engagement with stakeholders is really important, Tom, because when you include local communities, the users of the services, civil society organizations, you are able to generate impact data that really highlights the real world impact of your blended finance initiative and helps to shape the right framework and the right metrics to present then back to the funders and investors. So I think, yes, overall, with better impact measurement, management practices, greater impact transparency, we can really, maximize the positive social and environmental impact of these projects and get funders truly engaged with them.
Let's talk a bit about philanthropic capital, Dunn, because I know that the piece actually speaks to the importance of the role that can play in blended finance. Maybe tell me why is it that philanthropy is increasingly important in the space? And I wonder how it sits with other sources of funding in this area.
So that's a really good question. And that's another trend we've been observing is the sort of increasing role of philanthropy and the increasing interest of philanthropists to provide that philanthropic capital. So I think the reason it is important is that it can fill critical gaps and catalyze investments in projects, as I described earlier, and because it really complements the other sources of funding that come in. And I think there are a few characteristics of philanthropic capital that really make it important and relevant in this respect. So first of all, philanthropic organizations or philanthropists often have a higher risk tolerance. So compared to other investors, they can provide early stage funding or take on higher risks that commercial investors or public funders may not be willing to accept. So the risk-taking capital helps to de-risk projects and attract the additional investments from other sources. The second characteristic is that they can support innovative approaches and experimentation. And that is, of course, linked to their higher risk tolerance. And so this becomes really relevant and interesting at the pilot stage, where philanthropic capital can really help to pilot projects, providing grants for research and development, or testing new models, technologies, or business strategies that have potential to generate significantly higher impact. Thirdly, I think unlike traditional investors, philanthropists aren't solely motivated by financial returns. And so they have the flexibility to also prioritize impact over profit, which allows them to support projects that may not be financially viable in the short term, but have potential for long-term success, both in terms of impact and financial return. And then finally, philanthropy can really act as a bridge between different stakeholders. So there is a sort of a convening role between investors, governments, nonprofit organizations, other actors that philanthropists and their capital can help to facilitate. And that's really important because it drives the collaboration, the knowledge sharing, capacity building, for example, that's needed to build effective blended finance partnerships. So I see that as the role of philanthropic capital here.
Yeah, just a final question, Dan, that I have for you is the idea of making sure whatever these solutions look like, and there's so much innovation in the blended finance space, making sure that these things are tailored to the specific need, the specific local context. Tell me a bit, because I know from speaking with colleagues previously that that's something which is very important in all of the work that the UBS Optimus Foundation does. Tell me a bit in this context how you and your colleagues approach this aspect of your work.
You're absolutely right. It is important in all aspects of our work, and also in the case of blended finance. And we're finding increasingly that tailoring our blended finance solutions to local needs and contexts helps to make them stronger and more viable. So why is that? Well, local communities and regions often face unique social, economic, or environmental challenges. And so, of course, by tailoring your solution to the local need, your stakeholders can actually develop the right interventions that address the challenges and ensure also that your resources are being allocated effectively and efficiently. So it's not hard to see why solutions that are designed with local needs and contexts in mind are more likely to have a meaningful and lasting impact. By being responsive to local communities and understanding their specific priorities or aspirations, your initiatives are more likely to be relevant, sustainable, and also viable. We also find that when you tailor solutions to local contexts, there is, of course, a sense of ownership and buy-in amongst the local stakeholders. So this is including governments, communities, civil society organizations, for example, when they're actually actively involved in the design and the implementation of initiatives, then they're more likely to support and contribute to the success over the long term. And then I think it also helps to mitigate potential risks. So when you have developed your initiatives and your projects together with the local communities, they can actually help to identify and mitigate risks more effectively. And then last and not least, it is a very important way to promote inclusivity and equity of all initiatives. So I think overall tailoring blended finance solutions, as with any other development solutions, to local needs and context is really important to address the specific challenges, to maximize your impact, build your ownership and buy-in, mitigate risks, and promote inclusivity and equity. And the way we do this at the foundation, or ensure this in the case of blended finance, is that we choose to partner with the right organizations. So other partners who also recognize this and help ensure that the initiatives we work together on are tailored to local needs. So it's through the right partnerships that we approach this aspect.
Dan Daver from the UBS Optimus Foundation, bringing us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. You can listen again and explore more at monocle.com or follow us wherever you get your podcasts. As ever, you can discover more and find out how UBS can help you at ubs.com. Whilst you're there, you can always search Optimus Foundation and find out more about the work that Dunn and her colleagues are doing in the space. This is The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.